Okay. All right. Well, Hevra, we'll go right to our guest speaker here. Let me pull up the notes I wanted to share. We're discussing today the theme of our call is called Menuchas HaNefesh. And we're going to learn about I'm not sure, and Rabbi Harris can help me out on this, whether it's called a philosophy or an approach called innate health, principles of innate health.
Yes.
You know, all of us that are in the SA program and that are subscribers of the 12-step program, really by now, its approach is a spiritual journey. We talk about things like resentments and fears. We make amends. This is we clearly understand our self-centeredness and how it contributes to our addiction, and we see our powerlessness. We'll learn an approach that allows us to stay out of this battle that be going through. So, Rabbi Harris, understanding this can lead to compassion, and compassion leads to letting go, and letting go leads to letting God. So, Rabbi Hanukh Harris is the director of the Jewish Center for Well-Being. He's worked extensively with adults seeking to find freedom from unwanted behaviors and integrate life-changing wisdom. Prior to his being founder of the Jewish Center for Well-Being, the JCW, he also worked at 14 years as the educational director at Eshat Torah in Manhattan. So I want to introduce Rabbi Harris. I do want to say this before I go a little bit, before anybody would hop off. We're actually, Rabbi Harris and I will share at the end of this call that there's going to be two follow-up calls separate from our noon call that will be on basically the next two Mondays at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and he'll talk about a deeper look into this principles of innate health. So, Rabbi Harris, without further ado, I'd like to turn the microphone over to you, please.
Thank you so much. I'm really appreciative of this opportunity, David Chaim, and I appreciate you making room. You know, I want to introduce with a little bit of a thought that I feel is it's appropriate to guard your eyes. I feel it's appropriate to David Chaim, and I feel it's appropriate to the Tzibur that's listening right now. You know, there's a beautiful Gemara in Menachos, Kaf Tes Amud Beis, that talks about the nature of tshuva. And it says that it was told us Hashemayim v'haaretz behibaram al tikri behibaram ela behibaram, that the world was created with the letter hey. So the Gemara asks, in what way is it appropriate that the letter hey is the means by which God created the world? And it says that a hey. Let's see. The hay is similar to like a porch. It's open on, it's closed on three sides and open on one, indicating anybody who wants to leave this world, anyone who wants to be a chota, he can leave this world right out the bottom of the hay. And what's the reason for the hanging leg? Why is there a leg, the leg of the hay, the third side is hanging, that there's an opening, additional opening? If a person wants to tshuva, he can go up and get back in. So the Gemara asks a kind of a basic question. If the whole point of the hay is that it lets a person who wants, you know, free will, allows us to leave the world through the bottom, why do I need a second opening? Just let him go back up the way he came. And the Gemara's answer to this is that lo mistaya milsa, it's not going to work. It's not going to work like that, because the basic understanding is that, you know, when we leave this world, when we do a chet, to some extent we've gotten lost in our own thought, in our own inclinations, in our own way of thinking about the world. That's what's got us out of this world. To double down and to work harder at what is our own thinking, Lo Mis Diagnosis, we're not going to get back up in, so to speak. It requires to go a new direction. And this is the Gemara continues, Ked Omer Reish Lakish, hold on. Might exceed him the late team who yalitz. The pasuk says if a person wants to be a mocker, he can be a mocker. He can go on his own. He can be a mocker. Ula Novim, if a person wants to be like an onav, he wants to go in the route of a humble, yitain chain. There, it's that God will give him chain. God will give him a blessing. And from this, we see abar l'tahir misayin oso. I used to think that when the Gemara said that someone who wants to purify himself, he could do it on his own, but he should know that he'll have the benefit of help. But this Gemara is explaining to us that it's not like that. It's that Habala Tahir Misayim Biyado means that it requires a new direction. You cannot go back up the way you came. You have to go a new route, and that requires Siyata Dishmaya. The only way to do tshuva is to acknowledge that we need a divine blessing. And I feel that, having gotten to know a little bit about what Guard Your Eyes is doing and what David Chaim is doing, that this is a tzibur that is Baruch Hashem taking responsibility for their lives, and they're doing so by relying on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's really the path, and I just want to say how much I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share something with this tzibur right now. So that's my little introduction, but it's relevant to what we'll be speaking about. And as yesterday I mentioned in the call to some of the folks who might have been there, a little bit of a preview, my intent right now is to share a little bit of a personal experience with my own struggle at one point in my life with a taiva-related addiction, and then to kind of use that as a context to then introduce the principles of innate health. So Baruch Hashem, I had the opportunity to learn about Torah later on in life. Growing up, I'm a Baal Tshuva. And in my college years, I found myself kind of overwhelmed in the realm of, the whole social scene and the whole world. I just wasn't doing very well. A lot of negativity, a lot of, discomfort. And I didn't know quite how to find my way. And the natural way for me, I found, I didn't really plan it this way, is that I kind of landed in a tendency to escape with food. So on a daily basis, I found myself just, getting lost in just eating large quantities of cookies or snacks or whatever it was. And, I didn't know what to make of it, but I was living a double life because on some level I was a functioning guy who was doing reasonably well in university, and I had relationships, friends and all that. But I was running scared, and I was living a double life. And I didn't know quite where and how it was going to change, but that was my life. After college, I had the opportunity to travel in Israel, and Baruch Hashem, I became introduced to Torah. And that, of course, was life-changing. But even after I integrated into a world of Torah learning, into a yeshiva, even as I saw pathways forward in lots of ways, there was still emptiness, there was still pain, and there was still a tendency to escape. So even as I was moving forward in the yeshiva and learning and going up shiurim and taking on responsibilities in Eishet Torah, I was still living on some level a double life, and I didn't know how it was going to end. And my experience at the time was
anywhere, just drop it on the floor. Thank you. So he'd walked up.
My experience at the time was that I didn't know, I just didn't know what to do. I really experienced myself as stuck. And at a certain point, there was a transition. I can't say that there was a specific maisa, and I'll be reflecting a little bit on this, as I discuss the principles. But there was a certain transition. I went from being in a state, like the common denominator that I see in my experience of struggle was that there was a tremendous amount of judgment and resistance to my state of mind. I was working very hard to manage my habits, to program myself, to create charts and knasim and all kinds of resources to direct myself certain ways. And it was all filled with kind of like you know, like, how can I, why is it, you know, he doesn't look to be struggling the way I am. Why is it that I'm not able to overcome this resentment and frustration and judgment? And somewhere along the line, there was definitely a moment of vulnerability where I just kind of felt, I don't know how to do this. I really have no idea how to do this. And somewhere along the line, there was a gift of acceptance where I came to see that, you know what, it's not really personal, this whole struggle I'm having. Like, somehow or another, I have this nisayon. Somehow or another, I have this job. And a job is a good thing to have, you know. And I'm sharing this with you on the one hand because it's a good idea. It's an interesting idea to recognize and to accept the nature of our job in this world. But what I want to share with you, and this will be my transition to the principles, is that it came to me in a manner that today I wouldn't say I know how to replicate. I don't know how to replicate it in the sense that I could say, well, do this and then do this and do this. There was a gift, you know, and it came from, like David Chaim hinted at in the intro, you know, there was an acceptance and then there was a surrender and a letting go and a letting God. And here's where I want to share a little bit. I want to introduce the idea of the principles. The principles of innate health basically look at the spiritual nature of our psychological experience. And so when I usually talk about these ideas, I introduce the idea to folks, even people who are not dealing with, you know, dramatic compulsive behaviors, just regular people who are struggling in whatever ways they're struggling, because we're all struggling with unwanted behaviors on some level. And what I usually point out to people is that if you look at your life and you look at an area of your life that's important to you, maybe it might be your marriage. You know, I'll give my marriage as an example. It's fascinating to me that there are times in my experience of marriage where my wife might say or do something or not say or not do something to me that will strike me as just upsetting. You know, I feel resentful, or I feel kind of insulted, and it just becomes, you know, really unpleasant. On other occasions, it's kind of an amazing thing. Basically, a totally similar circumstance, a totally similar conversation or scenario, I'll find that she might do or say or not, you know, do or say pretty much a similar thing. And my experience of it is, it'll just be kind of chill. Like I won't find myself reactive. I won't find myself feeling hurt. I might see her in what she's doing in a light that I kind of see that she's, she's busy or she's kind of struggling in a certain way. And that's how she's showing up right now. And I find that my experience is that everybody is dealing with this on some level if they look. You know, for me, it points to an interesting question. You know, what is it that accounts for my capacity to have a variable nature type of response to what are otherwise comparable, consistent circumstances? And to me, this points to a spiritual thing, a spiritual phenomenon that you know. I mean, ultimately, it points to my thinking. To me, the fact that there are times where my wife might say something and I'll get defensive, it strikes me that I'm in kind of, you know, this is a simple idea. It's a mood. You know, human beings are subject to moods, and we go up and we go down. We get insecure. And in our insecure mood, things feel more personal and burdensome, and we are more inclined to just to have an ill-at-ease feeling that can lead to, you know, other steps. And then on other occasions, our mood is different. Our mood is more. You might use the word peaceful. You might use the word just comfortable, and it's kind of, there's an expansive feeling on some level, even if it's not crazy expansive, there's a variable nature to our moods. I certainly had this experience in my struggles with food. There were times where I would look at the food and I would experience having a whole afternoon of free time, and I wouldn't be inclined to want to go and run away and into an escape of some sort. And then there are times where, even with a busy day with a lot of wonderful things going on that I could identify as blessings and, you know, indications of how good my life was, even in those moments, I would sometimes feel gripped and I would, you know, and I would go and I would act in ways that I would regret. And so to me now, what I'm seeing more clearly is this beautiful and simple idea of moods. And moods to me are pointing to the fact that there's something called thought. You know, the principles of innate health talk about three basic principles that this is, when we talk about principles, we're kind of talking about gravity, you know, along the lines of gravity. Gravity is working in life, whether a person knows that gravity is working or whether a person doesn't know that gravity is working. It's helpful to know that gravity is working because it gives us a little insight, a little more understanding about the nature of our experience, but it's working no matter what. And that's true also for the nature of thought as a spiritual kind of principle, that every human being in the world is experiencing the unfolding kind of mysterious flow of thinking that's going through us. And this isn't so hard to see as far as I can see, in the sense that, you know, I could be in the middle of a conversation with somebody, and I suspect that there's folks that are on this call right now that on the one hand are sincerely interested in being on this call, but could very well be having things going on in their mind, right? I mean, you're not managing that, you're not planning to be thinking about what you're thinking, but you're having thoughts about how is this, you know, is this call interesting, or what do I compare this to? Is this similar to 12 steps? Is it not similar to 12 steps? Or maybe your thoughts are meandering in the direction of, who knows, you know, work or your lack of work. But our minds, there's a whole quality to our mind that we do have the capacity for personal directed thought. Like if I tell somebody, you know, think about or remember an experience that you like, you know, we have some level of personal thought that we can direct. But there's a beautiful and kind of mysterious quality of our thought that's not really directed, that's flowing and coming to us, not in a way that we're managing. Now, some of that thought is, like I said, it's insecure. You know, it kind of, there's a discomfort associated with it. And some of the thought's quite expansive. By itself, the nature of thought is neutral, meaning we can have thoughts come to our mind and then leave our mind without much of an impact or implication. But then there's an additional gift of life called the principle of consciousness, or awareness, you might say. And these things all work together, even though I'm referring to them as distinct principles. There really is just a oneness, but it's helpful in the terms of the language to refer to them separately. The quality of consciousness is the fact that human beings have the ability to feel their thinking. Moment to moment, a person is only experiencing, actually, the thoughts that they're having. It looks like we're experiencing the circumstances around us. It looks like when my wife says something to me that seems, you know, not appreciative or whatever it might be, it looks in the moment like it's her way of speaking that is the source of my upset, or alternatively, you know, my good feeling. But the actual truth is that I'm really only capable of experiencing life through the gift of thought as it's illuminated by consciousness. So to give an example, if I could put on a table an old school film reel of, you know, some movie, I don't know, put Star Wars on a table in a film reel, we could look at the film reel, and if we know that there's a lot of data in the film reel, there's all these images and all these pictures, you know, screen pics. But just looking at the film reel on the table, it doesn't necessarily draw us or impact us. But if I could put that film reel in a projector, in one of those old style projectors, and, you know, connect it and then switch it on, and then it would start running and a light would be shining through it in a way that it would project on a screen. And I'd see the scenes of, you know, Luke and Darth Vader battling it out with a, you know, with the lightsaber. I would likely start to feel drawn into that. My heart could start to beat a little faster, or I could get softened by a certain scene that would look, you know, touching. It would grip me. It would really feel like there's something there that I'm living inside of. Yeah. And that's really what's happening in a human experience moment to moment, is that we're if we feel something, it, as I said, it happens fast, so we don't always see it unfolding as thought. But it's kind of, you know, it's 100% the case that if we're feeling something, it's only the case that we're feeling our thinking. And our thinking is kind of, as I said, it's variable, it's flowing. It's not the truth that I'm feeling. It's my experience of my own thinking that I'm experiencing. And that to me is kind of meaningful, because it used to be, for example, that, you know, when I would get discouraged about my temptations with food, I would really feel, I'd feel entrapped. I'd feel really stuck. And I'd really be down on myself that, like, why, like, what is it about me that I'm so drawn to this desire to escape? Like, why do I have to this battle is so big and it's so hard and I fall down so many times. And even as I seem to sometimes be bigger than the battle, the next morning I wake up and there it is again, staring me in the face in a way that I don't know how to overcome it. And, like, what's wrong with me? You know, what is it about me that I have this problem? Why doesn't he have this problem? And, you know, more recently, I would say in my experience of marriage, before I became more connected with these principles a couple of years ago, if my wife and I would get into a tussle, or we would become upset with one another, often it was over themes that were, you know, thank God we've been married for 17 and a half years, and there would be certain themes that would replay themselves as the source of our conflict. And sometimes I'd get upset, and then after the fact, I'd feel discouraged. I would feel like, what is this about us that, you know, she has this issue and she seems to struggle, and I get reactive to her struggle, and I would come away discouraged about her and me and the nature of our marriage. And then I would start to think to myself, what am I going to do about this? Like, how am I going to fix this? How am I going to change this? And in truth, what I'm seeing now is that more than my disagreement, or more than my conflict with my wife, is a testimony to the quality of our marriage, or to the quality of our shalom bias, it has much more to do with the quality of my thinking in the moment. And I'm not my thinking. My thinking is something that goes through me, and I certainly have the free will. I can, you know, on some level, I can choose to turn inward, you know, to give attention to my thinking. But to be honest with you, I don't even always have. I find myself lost in an upset state of mind or insecure state of mind, and I don't know how to just pull myself out. But what I've seen is that the very understanding that this is the state I'm in this moment, whether it's conflict with my wife or if it's escape into food, whatever it might be, that state that I find myself in, as undesirable as it is, it really isn't a testimony about me. It's just the testimony to the nature of the human experience, that we are, every single one of us, cycling through both insecure thought and nice and secure thought. And that's, in Hashem's wisdom, he saw fit to make available to us both. And my understanding of these principles, to me, is quite consistent with what I've learned about Menuchas Nefesh, because I want to share with you a couple beautiful, beautiful psukim from Shlomo Melech. So he says in Mishlei, he says, "Machzik ba'oznei kelev oiver," someone who misaber al riv lolo, one who mixes into or engages into a fight that's not his, what can he be likened to? He can be likened to a person who grabs onto the ears of a passing dog. And, you know, what I see in this is that Shlomo HaMelech is telling us that in our lives, there are going to be characters that are going to enter our minds, you know, like troubling thoughts are going to enter our mind. They're going to look like a scary dog, let's say. And it would be normal for a regular human being, when a scary dog walks into his house, to want to take out the broom and, you know, use a little bit of force to usher the dog on his way. But if you look closely, in a lot of cases, and I think what he's saying when he says, you know, I'll reeve low on a, you know, mixing into an argument that's not yours, the argument that's not yours is referring to the thoughts of the Zohar, the insecure types of thoughts that I'm talking about. If a person looks closely at those thoughts, he'll realize they're like the dog that's just walking through. It's not stopping. It's just going to walk on through. Now, what happens when I take out the broom and go after the dog? Well, what do you think the dog is going to do when he, you know, when he sees someone aggressively coming after him and then getting a smack on the head? You know, that dog is gonna respond, and that dog that was happily walking on by is now all of a sudden going to become a force, a powerful force that I've now introduced, I've brought into my life in a way that it wasn't even there. Elsewhere, Shlomo Melech says, this is Koheles, he says, "Im ruach ha-moshel ta'ale alecha," if the spirit of that ruler comes up upon you, "mekaimcha al tanach," don't leave your place. So what I'm suggesting is that there's a whole nature to the experience of life that we're sometimes getting lost in thinking it's coming from the outside in. It looks like life is happening outside and it's a change, it's affecting us. Now, outside could mean people in our lives, but outside can also mean any circumstances. And circumstances here could be, you know, my past. It could be my what I consider to be my character. There are times where it looks like there's a fixed set of realities that are the source of my experience. But what we can know is that really the nature of life, the reality of life is that Ein Od Milvado, there's nothing other than the Almighty, and that we are living in His generosity. And if we're experiencing agitation or insecurity, it's a testimony to the nature of our thinking that we're experiencing, not an actual factor or circumstance. And the opportunity is to see that, not to be able to not necessarily need to analyze, react to, or battle the thoughts, but to appreciate that, you know, this is an experience of my own thinking. And it's not personal. And now, just to kind of tie it into to introduce what's the quote unquote third principle, which are, as I said, really one. The third principle that these folks talk about, who teach the principles of innate health, is the idea of divine mind, which is that, you know, it's helpful to know that your experience is coming from your thinking as it's reflected through the gift of consciousness. But it's important to know that none of this is happening except because there's an intelligence, there's a spiritual energy, a spiritual intelligence that we call God, that we call Kadosh Baruch Hu, that is really making possible the whole thing, you know, the whole phenomenon of thought, the whole experience of the gift of consciousness, the fact that we can come to experience life in a manner that looks dark and scary. All of that is happening inside of this beautiful wisdom and intelligence that no one can step away from. You know, there's no way that a person can become distant from, except in their own experience, except in their own perception that it's so. So we're trusting that there are times where a meaningful part of our avoda in this world is at times to recognize that I don't want to intervene. I can, you know, simply recognize and understand. I can simply recognize and understand my humanity. You know, and going back to my story with the food, you know, that's somewhere, somehow or another, when I felt overwhelmed and I just got to this place where I saw, you know, I don't know how to do this, you know, like I don't know how to do this. There was a moment where, even though I wasn't aware and conscious of this principle, the beauty of it is, as Shlomo Melech says elsewhere, again, Asa Elokim Efer Adam Yashar, God made man straight. Vehem Biu Cheshbonos Rabos, and we seek out calculations. There's a yashrus to a human being that, to a meaningful degree, when he understands a little bit about the value of you know, when he sees what Shlomo Melech is saying, that there are times where it just don't, you know, let this dog pass, you know, if he can be a little patient without his effort, without his exertion, he will, there's wisdom that is showing up, the wisdom of the Almighty, the Yashrus that with which he created us is already carrying us. And to a great extent, it's about, giving a little bit of a break to the striving and the exertion. And for me, that's what's been meaningful about this, has been the degree to which I've come to see and accept the limited, you know, the nature of my hishtadlus has changed. I feel that anytime I see myself struggling and upset about things that I'm dealing with or in, whereas in the past I would have been inclined to want to double down and to really, you know, really to work, you know, to process, to evaluate. It just looked to me like that's the responsible thing to do. You know, that's, if I'm trying to improve my marriage, if I'm trying to upgrade my habits or my, you know, approach to ruchnius or whatever, it just looked to me to make sense that when I was confronted by some negative experience, that I should really do something. And obviously we're here to have a role in our lives. But what I'm seeing for myself personally is that I want to look for the feeling I'm living in. I want to look for the feeling. Because if the feeling I'm experiencing in any given moment is tight or judging toward myself or others, there's a good chance that I'm living in insecure thought. And it's not personal. I don't need to get concerned or you know, I don't need to rid myself of the thought. You know, when the Moshe comes upon you, just, you know, don't leave your place. Like, just, you know, Makaimka is also Lashon Makom. Makom is, there's the connection that we have. You know, we don't need to work so hard. And it's not just that we don't need to work hard. There are times where our work is going to make ourselves, it's koshi votsam yadi. It's gonna make ourselves, it's gonna draw us further in to the insecure thought. And on Hashem's terms, when he, you know, if we're open, there's no question he's gonna send us insight. He's gonna send us understanding that's gonna come from the inside out. And that understanding that's gonna come from the inside out, the gift of thought that comes from that expansive place, it's going to look and feel different to us. It just will. And we won't be troubled by the presence of our insecure thinking in the same way. I think that's kind of an introduction, David Chaim. So how is that as a launching pad?
You know, it's it's a wow for me because I know it's tremendously complex, but simple. I can see the simplicity once you learn this. You shared it in such a beautifully articulate manner. Very impressive. The concepts really do fit quite nicely in with the 12-step program. The guys, we're on week 4, by the way, of a call cycle that generally takes about 22 weeks to go from the doctor's opinion through to page 103, all 12 steps. And at the very beginning, we, in fact, spend a lot of time talking about our thinking. We have exercises every day, you know, all around different things about cause and effect, about our willingness, you know, of making excuses, our the things we say before you think. But the very first day, we had an exercise that I enjoy repeating over and over again is be aware of your perceptions and your motives. You know, just to be aware, just be an observer, you know, allow ourselves to be aware of our perceptions, which is how are we looking at life, and our motives is what do we want out of it. If we can start from that place, then we can make real change, real healthy change. So this is very much in alignment of what we've been discussing around here. So thank you for that. The other thing that I could personally use is that just I captured principle number 3, and I knew where the principles of innate, I've been taking notes, and I know where they started, but I don't know exactly which is principle 1, and what's titled principle 2. Principle 3 is the idea of the divine mind. So what can you help me? What is principle 1 and what is principle 2?
Sure. So, you know, as I said, these are really, you know, they're three, but they're really, there's really one. You know, the one is that, you know, the divine mind is really,
Rabbi, I have to do a master mute. Wait just a second.
Sure.
Muted.
All right, so the code I gave you, you are unmuted, you're just fine. We'll ask others to unmute themselves as they ask questions. You said that the principles, while you shared there were three of them, they're all really one.
Correct.
Okay, so if you would just share what that one is and or, you know, for the sake of those of us that are taking notes, which was principle 1, which was principle 2, because principle 3 is the idea of the divine mind.
Yeah, so just to reiterate, the principles, the kind of distinction of principle is something that is, it's kind of happening whether you're aware or not, you know. So number one is thought that really, I mean, on a super spiritual level, you know, thought is any word that is what we would use to refer to any kind of manifestation of the formless. There's a formless energy behind all life. That energy shows up in the form, in, you know, the fact that a table is a table is because there's an extraordinary, you know, chemistry, the electrons are moving. There's an intelligence that's showing up in the form of life moment to moment. The electrons don't know how to manage themselves, but they do on a moment to moment basis. There's an intelligence that is showing up in the form of life. That's thought. Now, thought happens to also be something that we have by virtue of the gift of being human beings, is that thought shows up in our minds. So we get information flowing through our heads. The way that I walk out the door in the morning and I remember that I forgot my lunch sometimes, you know, right out the door. And then sometimes I remember, you know, after I've already gotten to my destination, the fact that I get touched by, you know, I recall an event in my life that touches me as I'm walking down the street. That's thought. Thoughts are flowing and you know, and it's the same way, as I said, that in this phone call, people are having thoughts independent of the, you know, they got onto this call for the sake of listening to a talk, but they've got thoughts that are happening in their head independent of the fact that they prefer to be solely focused on the talk. So thoughts are kind of the, you know, the, there's just this, the fact of life is that there's a flow of information that's showing up in the form of life from the formless to the form. And part of that is what shows up in our heads. You know, we're getting thoughts all the time. It's not, it's a fact. If you're a human being, there's a flow.
To in order to facilitate other questions, with you know the 12 minutes we have in this time slot, and I'd like to share it around. Can you please, real quickly, what is principle number two? If principle number one.
Number two is consciousness. Consciousness might be also referred to as awareness, and it's the ability to feel our thoughts, meaning thoughts by themselves are neutral, that thoughts do come and go. They're data that comes and goes in our head that don't necessarily leave a feeling imprint on ourselves. And we've seen that before. We have that happen. But of course, we also have a rich experience of life. We do feel life in a significant way. Now, it looks like it's the events around us or the circumstances around us that are impacting us and causing those feelings and experiences. But really what's happening is that it's the experience. Consciousness is the feeling of our thinking, that consciousness allows us the ability to take a thought and illuminate it in a way that, like, if I have a thought about some embarrassing episode that happened in my life as in the middle of whatever I'm doing, I could blanch, even though the event took place 10 years ago, I will feel that moment of insecurity come to life, even though it's long gone. But the gift of consciousness allows me to feel that.
Excellent. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And so therefore, how does the principle of innate health help a man stop masturbating and looking at pornography, or an overeater
drinking? That's a good question. So, you know, as I shared in my own experience of the, you know, struggles that I had at a certain point in escaping into food, was that it would often start with an insecure feeling, and a feeling of, I just don't feel good. I don't feel comfortable. I don't like this. Right? Now, what I would do is I would react to that. Maybe I would try to change my mind or move it or, you know, manage it in some way. And then as I would do that, I would basically be giving attention to the very thought that is the source of the insecure thought. And the experience of trying to resist, manage, battle the thought, as Shlomo Melech says, is a little bit like grabbing onto the ears of the dog that's passing by. So when a person has understanding that his experience of desire to escape, whether it's in a sexual experience or whatever it is, that experience of a desire to run away, you know, that experience is it's an experience of his thinking. It's like walking out the door and seeing a gray sky and somehow taking it personally and getting bothered by the fact that there's a gray sky. It's just there's weather in the sky. The sky is the sky. But there's weather is happening, and if you can just, you know, if you can see that it's not you, like it's not personal, it doesn't. That's where I would get tripped. I would get tripped so regularly in the judgment that came in having the temptation, and it was personal. It was like, what does this mean about me that I don't know how to avoid these thoughts? But now, at least for myself, this understanding is it's the impersonal nature that every human being in the world is going to go into an insecure place at times. It's not avoidable. And Shlomo Melech is talking about that, and that's why his ring said, Gamze Yavur, this is going to pass. It's the internal weather of our own consciousness. We don't have total control over the thoughts that pass through us, but we can be peaceful about the presence of escapist thoughts, and peaceful about the fact that they're in my life. But, you know, they need oxygen in order to live. And the oxygen is attention and concern and reaction.
Rabbi, I thought that, from my understanding, the acting out, you know, the turning to food, drugs, or sex was because my thoughts were so burdensome that I just wanted to medicate them away. I didn't want to feel them. And I had a positive reinforcement in going to pornography or to food or to drugs that said, woo, for that little bit of time, I didn't feel like crap. I actually got out of that feeling, and that's the reinforcer.
That's right.
So how?
Yeah,
how
absolutely.
So it's simple aware. I mean, I'm saying the ability to be aware that I'm reacting and that I have a thought is very good knowledge. But you know, how does the principles of innate health tell us? Okay. You don't turn to your drug of choice to medicate. Is there another way out so we don't have to? Is this a way to avoid feeling pain? You know, because if I'm in pain, I need
good,
the pain reliever. What is the principle principles doing for
it? That's a good question. So the first thing I would like to be clear is that this is offering what I would refer to as an understanding. That we're not. It's not so much of a program or strategy or a set of tools. It is an understanding that when a person is, you know, where would my capacity to experience relief from those thoughts come from? Well, it's the same direction that all thoughts come from. It's the source of all life. It's the unknown. It's the divine. So, but the problem is that when a person gets very engaged, see, there's so much wisdom that Hashem is already sending us. There's so much insight because He made us Yashar. It's only the degree to which we give energy to and react to and get concerned about the presence of these thoughts that is often triggered by the discomfort they feel. You know, it's for sure the discomfort we feel can often act as a trigger to want to, like, you know, fight or flight, either, you know, fight the thoughts or then end up, you know, getting, you know, trapped and running toward them. But if a person, and here's the interesting thing, is that, you know, it's a the overall premise here is that as a person comes to appreciate not so much the concern about the content of his thinking, but simply the fact that he is thinking, the fact that human beings do this. As he starts to see that, if he's open to appreciating, as I said, the impersonal nature, the wisdom that is present in him, and that's the beauty of this, is that, you know, as I was saying at the outset with regards to tshuva, the way back up is not through the way we left. You know, we leave the world through getting a little bit too engaged in and too concerned about our own thinking. We're choshesh. We're concerned for our, that's important, or this feels important, or this really feels compelling. And then, lo and behold, we're out of the world, right? So this is about helping us to appreciate that our feelings are just not, they're not really front page news. The feelings that we're feeling are really just indicators of the quality of the thinking that we're experiencing in the moment. And that thinking is going to shift. It's going to. I mean, there's even a depressed person experiences shifts in moods. He might not notice it because of how discouraged he is. But if somebody could assist him in just helping him, you know, slow down, he'll see every single one of us is going up and down in the course of our day. And we, I'll speak for myself, we get a little bit, you know, we feel, oh, look how great I did yesterday. I really managed to overcome all these things. And it's about seeing just how much the disproportionate nature of the, you know, the divine role here is we're living in this divine thinking, but we're getting a little lost and personalized about our discursive thinking.
Okay, so with that, I would encourage the guys to please stay on. I know that we're near the top of the hour, and Rabbi Harris's presentation is a real eye-opener for me. I'm really impressed with what I'm hearing, as I hope you are as well. And I'd like to open up the floor to questions for Rabbi Harris. I did a master mute a little bit earlier, so if you speak and you feel like we're not hearing you, you'll need to do a star six and toggle back and forth. So who has a question on this really interesting topic? Now, please don't be shy, guys. You know, we don't want Rabbi Harris to have some kind of thought that he's going to have to grapple with.
Well, I, you know, either it made no sense or everybody was just so clear, you know. I'll offer one.
This is Levy.
Yes, Levy.
Forgive me because I wasn't able to hear the entire presentation. What I heard was very compelling, very interesting. I'm curious, you know, from our prior discussions about Byron Katie and how there was one notion where there's a pasuk we sometimes quote called "Lahanchil Ohve Yesh," to you know, as a drasha almost, those who love what is. Lahanchil Ohve Yesh, and I'm wondering if you know, this kind of fits the framework that you're talking about, the aspect of what yesh is. I mean, the version of this mashpia to us thoughts, and it just makes these example of a table, this example of, you know, this energy is a revelation of a higher intelligence. So I'm wondering, you know, can you comment on, you know, is it loving what is that, you know, is that the basic underlying notion of what you're talking about, or is it?
I definitely think so. Meaning, well, first of all, double comment. I just want to mention, I was told yesterday at the beginning of, you know, the hour that oftentimes there can be questions that extend past the hour. So I'm available past 1 o'clock if there's interest. I'm just going to,
yes,
but you manage the clock.
Good. So yeah. Question, I believe you'll see a big part of the focus is, well, okay, now that I've learned this, how can this be applied? How can it help me?
Right. So in response to the question about, you know, loving what is, I think so. I think that what we're looking at here is a neutrality that, you know, when I first spoke to one of the directors of Guard Your Eyes, he commented that for all the beautiful content and the varied and rich content that there is on the site, one of the greatest ways that people are helped from the Guard Your Eyes site is when they show up to the site and they just get a feel from the forum and from other things just how common this challenge is and just how many people are dealing with it. That alone humanizes the struggle and there's a lot a human being is capable of doing people are capable of great jobs in this world. What makes it really difficult for us to do a job is when we've got a whole background noise of judgment and ridicule about the job we're doing. You know, human beings are incredible. Like Hashem made us such that we have what's called a learning curve. A normal human being, when he sets out to start a new task, whether it's something as simple as fielding a baseball or, you know, taking a customer's order on a, you know, business, if he doesn't know how to do it, but he starts, if he's got a relatively calm mind and he makes mistakes, he learns from those mistakes and he doesn't manage how he does that. He's not conscious of managing his trajectory of a learning curve. Hashem gave us wisdom. And when we are capable of seeing the judging thoughts and the non-accepting thoughts and the resisting thoughts that we have as thoughts, then they all of a sudden start to settle down. And the learning curve capacity that a human being has awakens within us. And that's the beauty of this to me that is so bitachon oriented is that to me, it's been such a breath of fresh air about appreciating practically how much I'm looking to the Almighty to really to share with me the insights that I'm looking for, to give me understanding, And then when I'm in my insecure state of mind, to appreciate that that's also, you know, something that I can trust is, you know, not a big deal. And that's I guess, you know, loving what is definitely part of that.
Okay, very good. Let's happy to share the questions. You may need to do a *6 to unmute yourself. Otherwise, let's see who else is on board, please. I mean, who else would like to ask a question?
This is Simcha. I just wanted to really concur, I guess, when you started with the whole thing with the, how we react to our moods. I certainly, you know, with my wife, I see it in some ways. Well, with my kids, I see it a lot, where I had my kids Monday the entire day, and I was in a fine mood, and whatever they did, 90%, if not more, I was okay with. And then last night, I was annoyed at my wife a little, and anything that they did out of line triggered a massive reaction over pretty much nothing. So I certainly, as you were talking, relate very much to what you were saying and how, you know, it's really just the thought or the mood that's going on at that moment and becoming more aware in order, you know, in order to, I guess, react and let go of it and not, as you said, grab onto the dog passing by.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I will tell you for myself, did you say what you wanted to say?
Yeah.
So I will say to you that in my experience of that, what would often happen is that I would have, let's say I'd have a day of annoyance with my kids. At a certain point, I would walk away from that experience and I would typically have thoughts that would say something to the effect of, that didn't go well. And, you know, you really, like, what is it with you that you can get so reactive to them? I mean, they're kids, and how are you going to teach them whatever it is that you're trying to teach them about not being makpid or blah, blah, blah? Like, who are you to even begin? Like, so there would be judging thoughts that would say, what are you going to do about this? Now, when a person is strategizing what to do from an insecure state of mind, it's going to, you know, like, you can see that there isn't really anything to do. You know, it's just the same way that when my kid comes home from school upset and agitated, maybe I'm inclined to want to, like, sit him down and you know, pull out of him what happened. But I see that it's just not kind to him. It's humane to go after him and engage him in that moment. But I know that in a day or that evening or even in an hour, there's a good chance that his feeling is going to settle. And then if I feel that there's a message I want to engage him with, I can say, hey, I can just check in with him. And to me, that has been a much kinder way of being with my children. And first and foremost, it's a kinder way of being with myself. I'm also subject to those to those moods.
Wow. So then I'm seem to be understanding that since the Chevra is becoming clearer and clearer, and especially the veterans that have been through this cycle before, are aware that there's a very, very strong connection between my restlessness, irritability, and discontent, as it teaches us in the doctor's opinion, you know, which creates the level of pain that causes me to want to medicate, which I'm powerless over, and then I act out, that if I can go back to the origin, the thought which creates the pain, am I hearing you correctly in saying that let's just pause for a moment, examine that thought, and really to see, is this a dog I want to grab the ears of? Am I saying it in the appropriate manner?
I would, my only caution is that the emphasis that I've learned these ideas from folks that I have a lot of respect for, and I've had the opportunity to kind of train with folks, and in my own experience, the overall orientation is exceptionally gentle, that, you know, sometimes I wake up to the fact that I'm in insecure thought kind of as it's unfolding, and it helps. And sometimes I wake up to the fact that I'm you know, in insecure thought after I've already yelled at somebody. You know, and it's never too late to wake up. And the more it's unbelievable. The understanding is something that we want to, you know, that overall understanding and looking in the direction of kind of the source of our thoughts, that's the general direction that we're looking at. And we're going to make mistakes, you know, we're going to continue to make mistakes because we get fooled. Every human being, you know, does get fooled by their thinking into, you know, in looking like it's real. But I've seen for myself that the nature of my being is that I have access to a wisdom that's way more sophisticated than my strategies and my ability to move and duck and, you know, and process. I'm looking for a feeling, you know, for me, that's what I'm looking for. It's really funny. I've never used to speak like this, but today I'm kind of just noticing my feeling, and that's enough. If I just feel the feeling of agitation, it's like an indicator light that goes off on my dashboard. Oh yeah. You probably, you know, you just know that there's something, there's some thought patterns happening in the weather of your head right now. And sometimes it helps me immediately, and sometimes, you know, whatever it does, it can settle me down, but I'm not really using it as tools per se.
Okay. All right. I'll try to digest that and think about that. And see if that answers the question, because I'm trying to understand how this is a tool. Really, once I'm, you know, aware, once I have awareness, what I can do to shift away from the pain that comes with that thought. Do the principles of innate help me make that shift? Because if I don't have, I mean, I'm speaking personally, and for many of the addicts that I'm talking to and the principles of the 12-step program, there is a clear cause and effect between my pain that I'm experiencing through my thoughts and my acting out. So therefore, when we go into step four and we do our inventories and we see our resentments and we see our fears and we see what's our part in it, our selfishness, our self-centeredness, needing to control and so on, that's what gives me the freedom to go, okay, you know, it's how I'm looking at these SOBs, you know, in my column one and what I've interpreted they've done to me in column number two that causes all this pain that shows up in column number three, which is, you know, that what they did affects my pride, my emotional security, material security, et cetera, et cetera. That the authors of the 12-step program have done quite successfully have given me a tool to go, okay, you know, do the time, you can take a different... You can view this differently, and because this new view will help you get out of resentment and fear. Do we have any alignment here with these principles of innate health along these lines? I'm just trying to see how they, you know, blend or together.
I'm not sure. You gave a nice summary of those couple steps, but I can't say that I'm fully clued into what they represent.
What they represent really basically is that I have feelings called resentments and fears. I'm looking at what causes those feelings of resentments and fears. I acknowledge that these feelings of resentment and fear create pain, and I know as an addict in my powerlessness that when I'm in pain, I medicate. So the solution in turning it over, my will and my life over to God, and looking at people with a different perspective of humility and generosity. Just like you said, you know, I think I can help you here a little bit because you talked about that kind of flow, you know, that kind of ability to be considerate, you know, kind, serene, I just don't have, the same thing can happen to me and I just don't feel as bad. So what I'm trying to see is how the principles of innate health actually can help a person deal with resentments and fears.
I see.
Which will,
so if I understood,
go ahead.
Yeah. So if I understood you, you said, look, what happens is that we can have extraordinary, you know, we can have powerful feelings, and those feelings can. You asked, you know, we asked. I think you asked, what's the source of those feelings? Right. You look at what the source of the feelings are.
Yes, in our four step of the 12 step programs, we look at the source of those feelings, which are
and the source of them would be what typically
people and what they do to us.
Okay, so that would be a potential distinction here, because my understanding is that there's really only one source for my feelings, and that's my thinking. And of course, my thinking is only coming from one place, and that's the source of all intelligence. And you know, I don't really, I'm not, to the extent that I would use anything to the degree that I would ever want to change my feelings, alleviate my feelings, even not through the medication of an escape or an addiction, but even just so that I would avoid the inclination to go toward the medication, I would be inclined to say, no, I don't necessarily need, I don't, I've seen for myself that I don't need to change the feelings, because what I hear in this is that feelings are thoughts, and thoughts are kind of fluid. And if I feel a lot of resentment or insecurity or anger or whatever it might be, I don't really need to do anything about it. And that's what I think that Shlomo Melech is telling us. You know the secret of how to succeed in the face of those strong feelings? He says, if the spirit of that ruler comes upon you, don't move. Don't leave your place. Because you're already in a healthy place, and you've been visited by a spirit of a ruler. But the good news is that the spirit of that ruler is transient. So when you want to do something to... even the premise of, well, what can I do to alleviate these feelings from a healthy place, to me, is at odds with this understanding of Menuchas HaNefesh. I have no need with this understanding. Now, in the interim, let's say I have issues with internet, you know, stuff or food or whatever it might be. In the interim, it would probably be healthy for me to set up some fences for myself and have a filter and all that good stuff. But I wouldn't walk around saying to myself that the secret of my relationship or healthy relationship with the internet is having a good filter. I would say the secret is my experience of thinking in the moment. And the more I get out of the way, the more I have less of a need to move, change, because I'm just seeing the impersonal nature of the feeling as it's coming from thought. And, you know, that's what Shlomo Melech is telling me. When the spirit of that feeling comes on you, you don't need to move anywhere. If you understand the transience of it, you're going to have something replace that feeling. It's our own desire to move, change process that ends up being the machzik ozne kelef. That's the subtlety of this, you know. And I'll just give you I'll pause there. I don't know, you know, this I just want to share as a bit of a caveat that these ideas for me and for anyone, I think, are and any idea that any one of us learns, it doesn't come so much as a download of information. Ultimately, it's something that we learn through seeing something as a gift. You know, the Almighty sends us insight the day that He sends us insight. And, you know, I've had people tell me, you know, so articulately and so beautifully, you know, an idea that I just wasn't, you know, touched by. I'm not suggesting that I've shared or articulated these ideas, you know, perfectly, but ultimately any learning experience we have is something that comes to us as a gift. We want to give ourselves patience and a little time. You know, if anybody's interested, there's some beautiful testimonials of people seeing these insights in a way that really were helpful in turning their lives around, and whether it be in addictions or Shalom Bias or, you know, and just hearing how common and how normal it is that people wake up to the phenomenon of thought, just the fact of thought, and help settle them into a new, a different feeling.
All right. So I'll allow, if it's okay with you, want to stay on, allow some more questions. But before we do, so we don't lose too many from our chevra, did you decide whether you'd like to begin starting next to offer?
Yeah, Monday. This coming Monday, 5 p.m. And the following Monday, it'll be two parts.
Time.
Mm-hmm. 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Right. So we'll send out a notice, guys, but please note that the rabbi will be giving a two-part series on Monday, November 16th at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard, and the second part will be on Monday, November 23rd at 5 p.m. So it would be worth your while to attend that to learn more. Add to what we've already learned today, or what can they expect when they come on the calls next week?
Good question. So what I think we'll be doing is we'll be taking a little bit of a, you know, I don't have, you know, a fourth, fifth, and sixth principle. So we'll be looking at what we shared today as a foundation, but we'll be looking a little bit more closely to the implications of these ideas. To how it is that we're already living in these principles. There's really nothing to do in terms of the principles, because it's, like I said, it's gravity, and it's, you know, the opportunity to slow down and see how these things are already in play in our lives, and seeing the implications of that will be really what we'll be looking at more closely in the next two parts. I want to mention Chaim David. I don't know which telephone number we'd be using. I guess that'll come out in
same one.
Okay, fine. Okay, great.
No change.
And
they
only
call and use the same call and et cetera.
Okay, and I'll just mention, if anybody's interested to get a little bit of information and, you know, some FAQs on the principles and some other people speaking briefly about testimonials, they can take a look at my site, jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. And there's a little bit of information and background on it, jewishcenterforwellbeing.com. And God willing, this coming Monday and the following Monday, we'll have a follow-up set of calls.
Okay. Do you feel some more?
I have another 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'm going to have to wrap up.
Okay. Anybody else with any other questions for Rabbi Harris, please?
This is Shlomo D. Understanding what you mentioned before, it's never good to make like an inventory whoever harmed us or who we harmed and go back on those thoughts to make amends.
I wouldn't say that. I'd say that you want to look for the feeling. You know, I've undertaken to apologize to somebody, which is ostensibly a good thing, but with a feeling of anger and resentment that, you know, ended up having side effects, you know, and I've sometimes been moved by a warm and humble feeling to pick up the phone and, you know, make a phone call, and it was, you know, beautiful, right? So what I'm pointing to is the fact that there's a whole dimension of our experience that is unfolding independent of our conscious directed activity or thinking. You know, that we're kind of, you know, as we say every day to Hashem, you're bestowing upon a person understanding and consciousness. And, you know, Hashem saw fit to give us all kinds of thought. It says, every day coming to undermine us, and if Hashem didn't help him, to me that is a beautiful, you know, indication that he's sending us moment to moment thoughts of a you know, insecure, destructive nature, as well as uplifting and insightful thoughts. And the more we are aware of being able to just notice that, we're just noticing it. When I get agitated, I don't have big conversations with my wife, because I just know.
Wait, Rabbi Harris, I don't know. I don't think it's just my line alone, but for some reason you're more muffled now.
Oh.
Either you're Yes. So now it sounds like you'll be better. Okay. So if you'll just
can you hear me? I don't know how much was heard or not. I guess my main point was to say that it could be wonderful and absolutely helpful to take an inventory on things that were hurtful to others or that where we've well, I guess maybe the question was seeing where we want to look for a feeling that's guiding us, because we could be involved in a mitzvah activity with a resentful feeling and it could end up with some harmful side effects. And we could be engaged in something that's coming from a humble feeling, and it just, you know, is beautiful. There are times where we have no choice. We have, you know, a mitzvah to do. We have to do it. But in general, I'm interested in noticing how my feeling is coming from my thinking that's coming to me moment to moment in a way that is like it's gravity. And I want to just see that and not get reactive to it. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it definitely makes sense, and it takes up a whole new idea of how to make an inventory, or not even looking on your emotions. Basically, what bothers you, just look on facts or whatever. I'm not sure how to explain it, but instead of letting your emotion drive you and then making amends or whatever. Look on facts.
That's right. That's right. And there might be chapters in that I've got resentments in life, for example, that I know at this point are not coming from the events that took place or the activities that a certain person did. Now, does that mean that I'm free and clear of the resentment? No, because it still visits me. It's like an insecure thought. You know, the insecure thought comes to me. There are times where I feel it more strongly and times where I feel it, you know, where it's not really there. But I've come to appreciate that Hashem, in his time, has lifted my spirits and has given me insight about an event in my life that I don't need to hurry it. I don't need to push it. I know that that practically speaking, I was responsible I took care of certain responsibilities that were appropriate. But past that point, in alleviating certain hurt feelings, I don't need to keep figuring out how to make those feelings shift or move, because I know that they're coming from my thinking, and that I don't always have control that my think. I don't have control over the full nature of how my thinking is unfolding in me, but I'm not as troubled by it. I don't get troubled by as much by the fact that I'm holding on at times. I still feel feelings of resentment about certain things. Because I'm just aware that that's kind of, you know, weather. It's like weather is happening in my head or in my heart. And what you know, big deal. I think with this, I'm going to need to wrap up. It has been an absolute pleasure. And as I said, I'm really appreciative of the opportunity to speak to the Tzibur. And I look for an opportunity, God willing, on Monday to continue the conversation.
Very good. All right, Rabbi Harris, we all appreciate your attendance today and sharing this fascinating view of the principles of an eight.